The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday.
Live
in the Israel Update with Anthony Rock, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Rock, a very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, Howard. It's good to hear you have a rant once in a while, I have to say.
And about abalone, you know. Who would have ever thought? I don't know. I can't get emotional about it. Looks like I am getting emotional about an abalone.
Exactly.
But it's not the point. Honestly, Anthony, if you never saw another abalone again, would you care?
I haven't seen one for a very long time, Howard. Apparently, it's not on the kosher menu here.
Okay, look, I've only ever seen it in the form of an ashtray, to be honest.
Okay.
But there you have it. All right. Okay, so can we just, before we start, just because it is Thursday, can we please talk about that little video clip that went viral from a football match between Israel and Scotland? A friend of mine sent it to me on WhatsApp yesterday, and I thought, oh my word, is this even real? And the next thing, it was everywhere. Tell us about it.
Well, actually, there are two videos that have gone viral from that football match. I actually watched the game, and I saw the little clips live. I had no idea that they were going to go viral, although at the moment that they happened, I did think that it was a little bit unusual. But the first video that I've seen is the one where the Israeli team are lined up for Hatikva, and the poor little Scottish mascot kids are standing there freezing in the typical
incredible
Glasgow weather. The football players from the Israeli team take off their tops and they wrap them around the kids. Who would imagine that an Israeli would take off his jersey and put it around a Scottish kid to protect them from the weather? But apparently that was the case, and I saw that. And I think it was very sweet. I've not seen
absolutely
it done
lovely
before. But the second thing was the man who was studying Gomorrah in the stands.
yeah, that was the other one. Absolutely, absolutely unbelievable.
So it seems like some religious man from Glasgow figured that there would probably be more Jews at the football game than at any other location in Glasgow on the night. And he came there sitting in the stand in the seats with his wife and children all running around him. And he was deeply engaged in this text. It could have been Talmud, I'm not quite sure. But he didn't seem to be much interested in the game that was going on around him. So one wonders why, how it was that he chose this particular location for his chavruta that night. But it was a very interesting scene nonetheless.
So Anthony, one of our listeners, Josh just sent a message saying, I learned with that rabbi, he's an American who lives in Israel. Isn't that funny? What a small
really
world.
What was he doing in Glasgow?
apparently he was visiting grandchildren.
Okay. Well, there were a lot of them there.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously they were tasked with taking the grandchildren to the game. And he said, oh, do I have to? And they said, just take a safe air with you.
Exactly.
I mean, I imagine that's how it played out. And so he did. And so the rest of the world saw what he was doing. All right. So let's just talk for a moment about this Airbnb story, because we haven't got to the end of it. It started attracting the attention of lawmakers in the United States. And it turns out, in fact, I read the lawyer's letter, and it turns out that they may have contravened some U.S. law by deciding to delist properties in the West Bank. What law, Anthony, has it contravened?
So the thing that surprised me about this whole story is less about what's going on with Airbnb specifically, but more about the fact that we really, at least I was not familiar with the extent of the laws that have been passed in America, which actually make BDS activities illegal there.
Mm-hmm.
And laws have been passed in something like half of the U.S. states at the state level, which effectively makes it illegal for companies to discriminate on a political or a religious basis against Israeli companies. And in fact, there are attempts to even pass a national law through the legislature, and apparently has support from both sides of the House, which will effectively shield Israeli businesses that are engaged in the West Bank by actually criminally penalizing U.S. entities who participate in these international boycotts. And the interesting thing is that the reason that these laws have been passed in so many of the U.S. states is in order to try to protect government contractors and state contractors who wish to contract with Israeli companies and who might therefore be, it might make things more difficult for companies that come up against them who are trying to enforce this boycott. And so effectively it makes it easier for the state and for the government to deal with this particular situation by enacting this law. But on the way, Airbnb, which is actually a company that's based in San Francisco, seems to have contravened at least some of these laws. And from what I can gather, there are now attempts to look into the situation, particularly from Senator Rob Portman of Ohio, who has already said that he wants to hear from Airbnb. He wants to understand what it is that they've done, why they've done it. And he's considering the possibility of taking legal action against them on the basis that they've contravened some of these laws. So it seems to me like Airbnb might have kind of misplayed this one a little bit. I don't know what benefit they think they could have got from actually delisting these West Bank properties, about 200 of them, I understand, that were listed on Airbnb. But it seems as if the negativity that's now been associated with them and the possibility that Israelis will leave Airbnb en masse and not use it, may well damage them economically as well. So I think, you know, we have not yet seen the end of the story. Of course, many Israeli politicians have weighed into the story, being very critical of Airbnb, calling it, discrimination against certain, against Israelis, against Jews. You know, why is it that some parts of Israel are being discriminated against while others are not? There's a lot of, a lot of tension that's going on, a lot of comments that are being made from the political sphere, but I think we are still going to see a lot of the story to roll yet. I think it could potentially be quite a pinnacle in terms of the whole BDS exercise. And it wouldn't surprise me if this may well serve to weaken BDS more than anything else that we've seen up until now. I'm watching this one very, very carefully and with a lot of interest.
Is there any way of knowing how many people have deregistered or delisted from Airbnb? I do know that that all over social media, but one has to be careful of that. I mean, I'm seeing it, but we all construct our own social media feeds to suit our own narratives. You know, we have this confirmation bias thing going on all the time. So to me, on my feeds, it looks like there are thousands of people that have deregistered. I wanted to myself, but I realized I didn't have the app, so I was quite upset by that. But as I said yesterday on the show, that I nearly by mistake deregistered from Uber, in my haste. But either way, we seem to be seeing hundreds of people doing it, but I don't know if this will actually affect them, if they will see it and if they will note that. Is there any way of knowing?
I don't think that we would know. I think that the only ones really who would know would be Airbnb. And, again, I think even for them it might be quite difficult because they don't know whether, it's hard to know whether they have a kind of a churn rate anyway of people delisting and deleting the app, without any reason, just because they're not using it or they're annoyed with it or whatever, or for other reasons. But I'm suspecting they're probably seeing a peak right now of people delisting. The question is whether that means that this affects their business in any way, because, one could argue that they've probably got enough people on board to rent the apartments that are available. This would really only affect them if by so many people delisting, that it would become difficult for property owners to fill their properties, and therefore Airbnb's income goes down as a result of less number of properties being rented out. So it's very, very difficult to know how many people are moving and indeed whether that would have a major economic impact on them.
Right, and a lot of people say, Leslie's saying when she delisted that asks the reason, and a lot of people have put anti-Semitism not being, and have made that the reason very, very clear. So that information must have started coming through to them. What I, aside from this legal thing, which I think does change the direction, and the way I was calling it until the whole legal development, the way I was calling it that Airbnb were going to deal with this, is the accusation that's been leveled at them is that, well, what about Western Sahara? What about Turkish-controlled Cyprus, etc.? What about Gaza? I believe what's going to happen is their way of dealing with that is to delist those properties as well. Instead of backtracking on the West, on the Judea and Samaria properties, they will just start to delist those as well. If there is a legal issue now, of course, that makes it a little bit more complex.
It'll be interesting to see whether they actually do. I'm not sure that they'll necessarily delist other properties as well, but you know, the legal issue certainly is very specific to the area of Judea and Samaria, to the West Bank, as people like to call it, because obviously there are specific laws in the US and at the state level as well, particularly at the state level at the moment, which prevent this type of behavior, right, this discriminatory behavior. So, I think this story is going to run.
Absolutely. It's reported that the Mossad provided information to the Argentinian authorities that prevented a terror attack there. What's known about this incident?
So apparently this was Mossad information that went to Argentina that helped to prevent a Hezbollah attack, which was going to be perpetrated against Jewish community centers in Buenos Aires. And in fact, two people are reported to have been arrested as a result of their links to Hezbollah. This was a report actually that came out by Al Jazeera, not been confirmed by the Israeli authorities or indeed by the Mossad, as you know, we would expect them not to say anything about that. But as we understand it, the authorities in Argentina found a cache of weapons, including a rifle and a shotgun and a number of other weapons. And they also found an image of a Hezbollah flag with Arabic writing, and apparently proof that these two individuals had actually traveled abroad. Suspicion, of course, that they'd linked up with some handlers from Hezbollah to try to direct them and potentially to give them money and other things in order to carry out these attacks. And of course, you know, Argentina remains very, very sensitive, given that in 1992 there was a bomb that that was bombed against the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires, and 29 people were killed in that event. And then 2 years later, the Jewish community center was attacked, and 85 people were killed in that particular attack. And even though that's more than 20 years ago, there is certainly a certain element of sensitivity around Jewish community activities in Argentina. So at the moment, you know, things the Israeli government are not commenting about this, but it seems that there's a lot of credibility to the story.
And it's, we're seeing them more and more. I mean, we've spoken about this, where they, whether it's a policy or not of Israel releasing this information, we are starting to see these things happening from time to time around the you know, around the world, where it's being noted that Israel or the Mossad has stopped a terror attack, whether it's in Europe, in France, or even in now in Argentina.
Yeah, I think it's not that there's more activity. I think it's just that we're becoming more aware of it, whereas before it was very much undercover and not much of it was discussed. I think now it's becoming more publicly known for reasons which are not that clear. But I think that overall it's been very beneficial to Israel's standing in the international community for this information to be publicly known.
Absolutely. Anthony Reich, that's where we leave it. It is 7:59. You have a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you on the other side. Hope everything is peaceful and wonderful.
Amen. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend. Shabbat Shalom to all of you.